This is an ABC podcast.
In your town, your suburb. From Casterton to Mallacoota.
From Mildura to Wilson's Prom.
This is where the conversation begins.
On ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria, this is The Conversation Hour.
So, have you written a love letter? Or maybe you've held on to a love letter. Is there one hidden in the bottom of your sock drawer or maybe in a box up on the top shelf in one of your cupboards? But beyond proclaiming love, what does a love letter tell us? Are they a form of documentation, a moment of time in history? Love letters, often written in secret, may be kept in secret. They capture our hearts and emotions. But they're also a time capsule of moments in time in history, from wars through to human rights. Good morning. My name's Rochelle Hunt, your co-host this morning, joining you from ABC Shepparton, Nick Healy. Nick, I take you as a bit of a hopeless romantic. Surely you've penned a love letter or held on to a love letter?
I'm about to out myself here. Yes, I do still have a folder of not necessarily love, not necessarily love letters, but letters of strong emotion, of conversations about emotion, many of them dealing with love, not all of them. It was something, I think, spending a couple of decades of your life in a world where there wasn't much in the way of email, in fact, it really didn't exist outside of universities. I enjoyed letter writing. I miss the act of letter writing. I miss the intimacy of letter writing. It's that intimacy, the nature of the platform itself lends itself to those declarations. I don't go back and look over them, but it's nice to know they're still there.
Well, today we're going to be speaking to those who archiving, you know, documenting history is their life. It's their life's work. And it turns out that love letters play a huge role in us understanding our history. So we'll be joined by the Australian War Museum in Canberra. They have a heap of love letters, of diary entries, of journal entries. And not only does it tell us what life was like during the war, both the First and Second World War, but they need volunteers. They need people like you and I to help be able to document those particular love letters. So we'll go through that. And we'll also go through the queer archives and look at those who are either in same-sex relationships, coming out at different times of their lives. What role do love letters play now to teach us about those moments in time, those moments in history, and how important they are?
I'm really keen to learn more about this because for many of those relationships within that queer history, it was occluded, it was hidden for very viable reasons at the time. So to be able to look back over them, see what we discover, I mean, it's such an incredible element of history to be breaking open and discovering.
So have you kept, found or penned a love letter? What do love letters tell us about people and place?
On ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Love letters straight from your heart.
This is The Conversation Hour.
Good morning, Rochelle Hunt and Nick Healy with you as we talk about the importance of love letters as a part of our history and our documentation. Joining you in the studio, Nick Henderson is a volunteer collection manager with the Australian Queer Archives. Nick, love letters, how important are they as an archivist?
Look, I think they're incredibly important. One of the things that often happens when material comes into an archive is people reflect on their lives and they look at that material and often they want to present a particular form of themselves. They kind of go through, they edit, they kind of think about it, go, oh, maybe this is a bit too private. And so one of the things that we often talk to them about is trying to talk about that kind of full aspect of their lives and looking at, you know, it might be public and it also might be private. And for a lot of queer people, the private aspect, the intimate aspect is often really, really important to who they are and how they present themselves to the world. So, you know, we're really keen to ensure that that material is preserved for the future.
Nick, and also it's Nick here, this isn't going to get confusing
this morning. It's going to just go really, really well.
We've got a lot of people calling in to talk about this. We've actually got Duty who's called in from Rosebud. Good morning to you.
Morning. How's it going? And first, I just want to do a shout-out and the thoughts of those people who have probably lost, like, bits of their own archives in the last, you know, recently and in years past. But I am going to talk about my own little archive.
You're so right, though, Judy, in that before you tell us about your love letter story, I mean, we know that there could be at least 25 homes that have been lost in the area of the Grampians. People are still trying to get back there to figure out whether or not their home is still standing. At the end of the day, what is it the thing that we look for? It's those love letters, it's those diaries, it's those photographs in our homes. When we talk about what's important and how we document our own lives, you're so right, they are the letters. What's yours?
They can't be replaced. I've got a campaign box. Look, sorry if anyone vomits when I say this, right? I've got a campaign box, which is like one of those old, like, 18th century things that ship's captains used to have or officers used to have to write home. They used to have a little letter writing section, and it's amazing. If anyone's got one, or look it up on the internet, it's an amazing little piece of history. It doesn't exist anymore because you don't write letters in the way. But my wife and I keep all our cards and letters that we've written to each other. Doesn't happen so much anymore. But we go back to that every now and again and, like, have a little check-in with our relationship from the past and have a look at little things that are, like, you know, you might have forgotten about. It's like, oh, that's something that you used to enjoy, or that's something that we used to get excited about. And
I used to be really nice to you.
Yeah. Yes, that exactly. we often say that.
Dude,
we used to love each other. Jokingly.
This is amazing to me because I don't think many people take love letters and look at them as a way to, I don't know, almost take a health check or a temperature check of their own relationship. Yeah. Do you find it helpful?
Oh, very much so. And if you go back to the first ones, you're like, oh, wow. If you were to sort of distill that and encapsulate that sentiment, even if it's not like sustainable, really, if you check back on it and go, I'm capable of this, I can actually, we are as a couple capable of this, and we can go back there. I don't know. I didn't realize how this phone in would actually remind me of this actual sentiment, but it's actually really helpful.
I love everything about this. Do you still write little letters to each other? Like, I can remember now, God, you're making me take a bit of a health check of my own relationship. And my husband and I used to, a long time ago, we just leave little notes for each other around the house, especially
now, right?
If you worked different shifts. Do you still write each other love letters, Duty?
Well, it's all digital, right? It's all emails and texts and stuff. Yet, you know, my wife is really good for writing me like a card or something on a significant day, and she'll write a message in it, and she'll date it as well. That's something that's really important. And that's sorry, I've got a result of the love letters in the back here, at the back of the car here, causing havoc. Maybe we should print them out, right?
Yeah,
He just literally ripped a page out of a book about the Titanic, and on a page about a letter oh, my Lord, this is so weird. Anyway,
you're having your own little self-reflection live on air. Judy, I think you've got a lot of people really thinking about this. Before we have a chat to the director of the Australian War Museum and the head of research at the Australian War Museum about the love letters that they're holding on to, as an archivist, Nick Henderson, you've been an archivist for a really long time with multiple hats that you wear. The fact that we actually don't put pen to paper anymore, does that, I'm generalising, but not as often as we used to. How does that affect how we document and how we archive history?
It's really significant, and there is this almost, digital chasm that happens, you know, from the advent of the internet. And as we started doing, you know, basically sending things mostly by email or by SMS and other forms, digitally, social media, there are ways to archive some of that and to personally archive things relating to social media presence and emails as well. But I think for a lot of people, you know, they don't want to spend that much time on a computer. You know, they're there every day, they're in front of a computer at work, they don't want to be spending a lot of time. Some people do, and it is possible. And I think part of talking about digital archiving and the additional aspect of what they can do as part of that to preserve their own digital record and footprint is really important. And we talk to people about that as archivists, but it's not always the easiest. It is a bit more complex than the physical archiving.
It's really interesting to me, Nick, because even the way we have used those digital platforms has changed very quickly over the past, you know, decade or two, where we used to write emails. You used to write an email, a very long email, and then a couple of days later you'd log into your email and check it. You know, that was more traditional letter writing. I mean, you know, these days are we just archiving a whole bunch of unanswered texts that read, "You up? What you doing? How are you?"
Well, I have to say, in my own because I also have a little shoebox which has my own love letters in, I've got a printout of an email from my first partner when we'd met off it. We'd actually met off an online chat group, and then he emailed me all the spelling mistakes. I used to have access to the original, but of course, in the way of the world, I got locked out of that by Hotmail, and can no longer access all of my early love letters via email.
This is when we talk about archives and trying to come together as a society to retrieve them. We need to go to like MySpace, Hotmail, you know, all of these old sites that no longer work. There's texts here. This is from Judy and Mount Eliza. My now husband of 60 years had a holiday job when we hadn't been going out for very long. He was staying at a large property in Mount Eliza and doing groundwork. He wrote me several love letters, and after his signature, he always drew little pictures of some of the chores he was doing, e.g. up a ladder with shears or cutting a hedge. So have you penned a love letter, and what does it tell us about history? Are they more important than we realize?
Who are your love letter?
On ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria, this is The Conversation Hour.
Rochelle Hunt and Nick Healy with you. I'm in Melbourne. Nick joining you from ABC Shepparton in the studio. Nick Henderson, the Volunteer Collection Manager of the Australian Queer Archives. So we talk about the importance of documenting love letters and what they mean, not just to us personally, but to history as well. This is from Kay. I'm in a same-sex relationship and have been so for 32 years. In one of my first cards to my partner, I wrote that she was the icing on the cake. Still, when I leave a note in the kitchen bench, it starts with "Dear Icing." when I'm away from home for a few days, I leave those notes in various places for her to find. I'm so lucky. Those little love letters. Matt Anderson is the director of the Australian War Memorial, and Robin Van Dyke is the head of the Research Centre at the Australian War Memorial. First things first, thank you for kicking off today's conversation. The entire idea for doing a conversation hour on love letters came from the fact that the Australian War Memorial takes love letters very seriously, Matt.
We do. G'day, Rochelle. G'day, Nick. Absolutely. This is about, you know, people serve, suffer and die in wars. People are at home worrying about them, and there's nothing more profoundly personal than the communication. You know, nowadays, of course, as you rightly said, it's emails and it's texts and it's WhatsApps, but 100 years ago, they were letters. They were letters that came via ship. They were letters that came via snail mail, and what they've ultimately proved is time capsules. These are moments that are frozen in time, and the memorial's determined to make them available to people to read and to reflect upon, and hopefully encourage people to pick up the pen and start writing again.
Matt, I can only imagine looking through them. I mean, we are talking about time periods where people are genuinely afraid for their own life. It brings out that emotion. It makes you want to communicate the depths of the feelings you have. There's nothing quite like them, to be honest.
Well, there isn't. And we have, in our First World War gallery, for example, we have a little letter. And if you'd allow me to read it, it was written by a guy called Private Thomas Anderson White. Now, he wrote this letter in the hope that it would never be sent, right? So he was on the troop ship just hours before he landed at Gallipoli. And it was to his fiancée, Eileen Wallace Champion. And he just, in the event of his death, "My dear sweetheart," he wrote, "I thought of writing this in case I went under suddenly. Not that at present I have any thought of not seeing you again, but in case of accidents. You'll know that my thoughts will have been you right up to the end. Of this I feel absolutely certain. You can't imagine how it hurts me to write this letter. The one thing I can't bear to think of is the possibility of not being able to see you, to marry you, to live the happiest of lives with you. But that that hurts worst of all is you and your sorrow. Darling, I want you to grieve as little as possible. Just think of me as non-existent in spirit, blotted out completely," he wrote. I would often soften the last thoughts if you knew, if I knew that you'd be really happy again. I want you to marry when the opportunity arises. If it's not to be me, may it be someone much worthier. I've endeavoured to make you as happy as I could, and to make you happy would have been my sole ambition. Goodbye, my love. May you get all the happiness you deserve. That will be my last wish. Private Thomas White rowed ashore at Gallipoli, was shot at the landing without firing a shot, and was buried at sea.
Wow. How long did it take for Eileen to receive that letter, do you know? Because quite often correspondence was really hard to get. I mean, I can't imagine what it would be like to write that, to receive that, everything about that letter.
Yeah, I think, well, it would have been months, presumably, because, of course, they would have gone through his effects after he died, and they would have gathered them up, and then it would have gone on a ship back to Alexandria, and Alexandria possibly to London, and then whatever the next, you know, sort of troop ship that was empty but was going back home, or hospital ship that was going back home, that would have had the mail on it, then would have got home. So it would have been months. She certainly would have more likely than not received news of his death before she received that letter.
Robin, to bring you in, head of the Research Centre at the Australian War Memorial, these are incredible first-person accounts, first-person documentation. Where are the majority of them coming from for the collection?
The majority of the memorial's collection is actually a donated collection. So originally they would have been donated by the soldiers themselves, and then later on families. And they're still coming in today, you know, in shoe boxes or on floppy disks. We were talking about digital.
Always shoe boxes.
It is actually. It's seriously not uncommon. Sticky tape into scrapbooks. Great one. We love that knot. So, you know, they come in all shapes and sizes and in different forms. And we have a very world-class collection. It's 10,000 collections held at the memorial from different people. And a collection isn't just one letter. A collection can be people's body of letter writing, their diary, their souvenirs and bits and pieces that they carried. So we've got an incredibly large collection of people's personal experiences. And actually, I think in war, it's one of the few times when people do sit down in this situation, a huge cross-section of people sitting down, putting pen to paper, more than in other times because of the need. It's the only option before telephone, you know, before you could call home. So it's what you have.
Before I want to sort of pick your brain a little bit, Robin, because I've seen some incredible photographs of the way you even handle these letters, you know, the gloves and what it would be like to actually physically hold some of these letters. You spoke then about the broad section of our community and society and what it tells us. Nick Henderson is the Volunteer Collections Manager of Queer Archives Australia. When we talk about our queer community, the love letters during periods of war, this is something that is a big part of your collection and is really important.
Absolutely. And it was also, as with a lot of the period that we're talking about, you know, it's a period of intense focus from whether or not it might be, you know, more senior elements of the military. And so, or, you know, policing in different ways. And that material is often have to be quite guarded. You know, people would change the gender or degender the sort of material that they were sending to their partners. And one collection that we came in that has come into the archive after a large ARC project from the 1970s, we've got the collection of love letters. Generally, it's actually like a telex message on one side from one partner, and then going back is the response on the back of the letter. And so you can see very clearly in a number of cases where they've changed the gender or just modified the language. And it was really, you know, really important at that time to be to ensure that they weren't picked up. You know, Defence went on a number of witch hunts particularly with lesbians, but also with gay men. Over that
period. So they were monitored in some way and led to witch hunts.
Absolutely. And so for a lot of that correspondence would have been monitored in wartime in World War I and World War II to ensure that any information relating to particular campaigns wasn't included. So they were heavily monitored, but it was quite a different story for gay men in terms of and lesbians in terms of intimacy.
Matt Anderson, I know we don't have you for much longer as the That's director okay. of the Australian War Memorial. We'll go into how you want the public to help a little later with Robin. When we talk about love letters and their importance, do you think that there are still some kind of dotted away that are still in those shoe boxes hidden at the moment that you want?
I guarantee there are still letters that are sitting above, you know, tall boys and cupboards in grandparents' houses and the like. You know, we see them often turn up in deceased estate auctions where people just don't know what they are, and they say to us, we've got this shoebox, we have this sepia-toned photo album which has a collection of photos and, as Robin was saying, sticky-taped letters.
Heather, you've got war letters yourself?
I've got a box of letters. Hi, everybody. I've got a box of letters that were written to my mother during World War II by a soldier that she obviously knew before the war. She went out with him, and then I suspect from that they broke up, and then he joined up 6 weeks after the beginning of World War II, and then they started writing to each other. So we've got this very one-sided archive of all his letters that he wrote to her over several years during the war, and they actually became engaged, but for whatever reason, they never married. But the other interesting thing is what Rochelle was alluding to at the beginning, is that they have his description of Melbourne at the time in the late 30s and early 40s of Collins Street and all the things that he loved about Melbourne, but also he was sent to the Middle East and he was stationed in Palestine, and he describes what it was like there then, and this was prior to the formation of Israel.
So I'm feeling like, Heather, we need to, I dare say that we have got both Robin and Matt there saying, we need this letter.
Well, there's about 50 letters. And my mother's been dead for over 40 years, and we've only just put them in chronological order and read them all. And I've cried my way through them. Oh. And my daughter has even tried to get in touch with the family to see if we've got the letters that Mum wrote back to him.
That's what I wanted to ask, Heather. It sounds like it's almost a bit of a secret kind of a family history for you. You're still working out the full details of it.
We knew that my mother, we knew about these letters. They were always tucked in the back of Mum's wardrobe, exactly as you described. And then she died over 40 years ago, and these letters have now been sitting in my house, and I think over the years I've probably dipped into them a bit, but it's only recently that I've got a daughter who's very interested in family history, and we dug them out and put them in chronological order and we read them together. And it's just been...
And went through about 3,000 boxes of tissues. Heather, I'm going to pop you back on hold just because I feel like that both Matt and Robin would want to get in touch with you. Matt, before we say goodbye to you, I mean, as Heather just said, not only do they tell us about beautiful and heartbreaking personal relationships, they tell us about our communities and our society at the time, don't they?
You know, as we know, you think about the Second World War and a population of 7 million people. You know, 960,000 people enlisted, and there wasn't a family in the country that wasn't affected one way or another by the war, either on the home front or those who were, you know, sort of deployed or called up to service. And it's not just a window on the conflict, but it's a window on society. It tells us who we were as a nation at that moment in time, and they really are time capsules. But, you know, the most important thing we can do, and what we are doing here at the memorial, is just making sure they're discoverable. You know, it's one thing to have an item in our collection. It's another thing to have digitised it. But it's another thing, again, entirely to be able to make the contents of that letter discoverable, searchable, and spread beyond the confines just of one family or one shoebox, and make it a gift to the nation. And that's what we're trying to do now, is just make all of this this, you know, collective service, this collective communication, this collective grieving, this collective pride, ultimately lead to a much richer, deeper understanding of the Australian experience of war, and that's what we're on about, and we need volunteers to help us.
Well, we're going to give all of those details towards the end of the program. We know you have to go, Matt. So, Matt Anderson, thank you so much. He's the director of the Australian War Memorial. Nick Henderson is in the studio with you, volunteer collection manager at the Australian Queer Archives. And still joining us from our Canberra studios, Robin van Dyk, who's the head of the Research Centre at the Australian War Memorial. There's so many texts, Nick Healy, on this, and it's really interesting. I mean, there's one here that says, my daughter lives in another state. I often write letters to her, telling her what a great daughter she is, how proud of her I am, and her own journey into motherhood. So when we talk about love letters, they don't have to be to partners.
They don't. And then they don't.
Then there's this one. Hey, guys, today I signed my application for divorce, finally, after 12 years of being separated. However, I still have love letters that we wrote to each other 28 years ago. And because they're a part of my past, it feels wrong just to throw them out. Happy Valentine's Day. When we talk about love letters, Nick Henderson, they don't have to be from partner to partner, do they?
Not at all. And some of the, I think, most affecting letters that I've ever come across in the archives actually relate more to unrequited love. So we have a number of collections relating to counselling services or individuals who kind of had that sort of role in community. And one of those collections is a former academic, Sue Wills. And she was one of the first women to come out publicly on television in the early 1970s with her then partner, Gabby Antolovich. And because of the kind of intimacy and just normalcy that they showed, people wrote her letters. Oh. She did, you know, a story in the Australian Women's Weekly, and she was involved in the wonderfully named Camp Women's Association, or CWA, they kind of took it on, which is quite cute. But people wrote her letters about how frustrating and how hard it was to be so isolated, trying to express love for, you know, and there were gym teachers or others, you know, the people in their lives that they wanted to, but because of society, family, or other reasons, they felt like they couldn't. They didn't. They felt isolated. They felt they were the only person. And so being able to write about love to someone was really important.
How easy / difficult is it for you to get your hands on these letters? Do people send them to you, contact you?
Yeah, look, it's one of those things. I think for a lot of people, they keep those quite close. I think for a lot of more public figures, you know, when they put their lives into an archive, generally those are the things that are held back. I think with a lot of people, they often hold on to their papers for a very long time. It's only something they think about maybe as they head into later life. And so when we talk to people about preserving that material, we try and look at that kind of entirety of collection, and it can be quite tricky for people to think that something that is so private and intimate might have relevance beyond themselves.
Mm, and like really Heather's does. Box of letters, you know, over 50 letters. So maybe you found or you penned a love letter. What do they tell us about people and about place?
Once I had a secret love.
On ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
It lived within the heart of
Rochelle Hunt and Nick Healy with you as we talk love letters and how they form a part of our history, that the documentation of them is so important. Nick Henderson, the volunteer collection manager of the Australian Queer Archives, with us. And joining us from our Canberra studios, Robin van Dyk, the head of the Research Centre of the Australian War Memorial. We will give details on how people can volunteer to help transcribe some of these thousands of love letters that you have as a part of your national collection, Robin. But what is it like to hold them in your hand? They are such a personal thing. Is it emotional?
Oh, definitely. When you actually read through those letters, you're walking back in time. There's definitely this feeling of time travel. And you can get very involved in the ins and outs of people's families and what's going on. So you do feel like you're part of something. It's a very emotional journey. And it can be very upsetting. And it's one thing to think about is if that person doesn't survive the war. I have had transcribers, you know, get very upset that they've been travelling along with this person and sharing their experiences, yes, and they don't survive because war was huge and tragic at that time and many lives were lost. So it is a function of our collection that it can be The emotion can be the loss of a loved one. It can be the separation. So even if you survive the war, if you have a sweetheart at home that you're hoping to marry, you can be 5 years, 4 years, 3 years away from that
person.
And
they were quite young too. So maybe even at the very beginning of a relationship, you know, where you're like, I don't know, is this the one? Is he, she the one?
I'm 19 years old.
I mean,
yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, the collection that we're featuring today, the Keshen collection, Mac and Dorothy, they were teenagers when they got together, and then they were not married when he went off to war. And there's a lot of reassurances in those letters, a lot of anxiety. She would say, I went to a dance, and then there'd be this anxiety about who are you going to the dance with, and, you know, are we still together? Are we, you know, so there's a lot of reassurances. And I think at one point Mac wrote, I could just write the whole letter as, you know, I love you, that without other things. But he realises that he needs to say other things as well. So the challenges of how much you can write is another issue in the war context. So Mac was a prisoner of war in Germany, and he was only allowed one letter a month. And, you know, if you think you've got a love at home, how do you express that in one letter a month? But he did for 5 years.
It's just absolutely beautiful. Just a couple of quick texts, and because we're talking a lot of older letters, I enjoyed this one that said, my wife and I actually met in 1996, 3 months before I had to be overseas for a year. We wrote to each other every week. Sometimes they were 6 pages long. We all will have those letters in storage. I'd love to see what they're saying these days. Maureen's called in from Mount Waverley. Maureen, good morning.
Oh, hi.
You've got some war letters as well?
I have letters that are between my grandmother and her son, my uncle, in both directions from the Second World War. My uncle was in the Air Force.
So how did you find them?
So it was a very long way round. They actually came back into the family from my uncle's companion.
And so what do you want, like, what do you do with them now? Like, when you discovered them, what was the...
Well, at the moment, I've just got them sort of in storage. They're not in a shoebox, but in storage in my house, so they're kept safely. But I really don't know what to do with them. And the funny thing is, because my uncle was such a private person, I don't want to read them.
So you haven't read them?
You know, no, I haven't.
Oh.
Oh, the temptation would be there. You're a stronger woman than I am, Maureen. Oh, look, I might pop you back on hold as well, because these are all the sort of letters that we're talking about. Joy DeMoussy is a professor of history and the Dean of Arts at the Australian Catholic University. And when we talk about how we document history, Joy, where does emotion, where does love come into it for you as a historian?
Yeah, that's a great question. And the role of love and its history has drawn the attention of historians from, you know, many centuries ago to the present. So we're talking about wartime conditions, and wartime conditions produce certain types of expression and language that might not have been there when love letters were written, you know, centuries before. So I guess looking at it from the history of emotion, love is a category that does change over time in how the rituals are performed, in how the language is spoken about love. And you see that obviously in love letters. So when you study it over a period of time, you can see how that's changed. Modern day love really has been defined by consumerism in ways that it wasn't in previous generations or decades in the same way. And some people argue that it's become too consumerist in our current society. But I think understanding that the way we relate to love, the way we understand it, is tied to our time and place.
Joy, it would also tell us a lot, the language we use, the way we describe that intimacy, even who we're willing to talk about being, attracted to, intimate with. It tells us a lot about the morals and the mores of the society at any given time.
Absolutely, and it reflects those values and mores and expectations of behaviour, if you like, of a given culture and religion and time and place. Absolutely. We can look at illicit love, you know, the notion of love that is illicit, that was illicit, you know, decades ago, that is now no longer illicit, and how people talked about love in a secret way because it was deemed illicit. So, you know, there's lots of changes that have happened to understandings of love and legitimacy around love.
That would be a big part, Nick Henderson, of your work and your archives, I could imagine.
Absolutely, and uncovering that and looking at issues to do with how you might talk about platonic love or other forms of love, you know, and often, you know, some of the wonderful love letters in Australia that have kind of come to light after the fact, the prison letters of Captain Moonlight, the bushranger, and his expressions of love for his companion and gang member who he saw shot, who he carried in his arms, and at the time he got captured and just before he got hanged in 1880, he wrote a whole series of letters and even wrote up the text that he wanted to be buried in the same grave, and he wrote the text on that he wanted inscribed on the gravestone. So, you know, you've got all these different things, but trying to tease apart these aspects and what we understand between intimate, sexual or platonic and all these ways and how we kind of frame that over time means, you know, you really do have to dig into it. And as
just
Jo says.
Finally, Joy, to I guess carry on what Nick was saying there, what starts out as love, it very quickly becomes political almost, and it gives you markers in time of not only our society, but how we look at things through a political lens.
Well, absolutely. And the slogan of the women's movement in the 70s was, of course, the personal is political. And anything to do with intimacy, sexual relations, romantic love, can translate politically, of course, especially when you have governments and laws that outlaw love, outlaw particular relationships, as we know has happened in the past. So it can definitely be political. And that's why those letters that are written at times when certain love is outlawed are so valuable, because they're written in a language in a way that it's secret and meant only, you know, for the recipient, and tell us a lot about the cultural mores of that time, which is real gold for historians.
Joy DeMercy, thank you so much. You've been amazing today, and thank you for taking the time to come and have a chat. Joy is Professor of History and Dean of Arts at the ACU. And Robin Van Dyke from the Australian War Memorial, more than a few people texting in saying, look, I do have these letters. They are in a shoebox. What is the best way to actually look after them?
Yeah, actually, on the War Memorial's website, we do have a page that gives you some tips on how best to care for the letters, and that's probably something worth checking. If they've been in that shoebox for a very long time and they're looking okay, you can probably consider that they're fairly stable and doing all right in there. If the things that really harm paper are things like direct sunlight, damp, handling. This is why the War Memorial digitises its collections, because handling... Our collections are subject to a lot of historic research, and it's important that we make those collections available. But if they're handled a lot, and some of our collections, if we didn't have them digitised, would be almost on public access every day. And so the way to preserve a collection in an institution is to digitise it and make it available on the web. If you're somebody at home with a collection and you do feel like you're handling it a lot, and you want to keep it, maybe get some plastic sleeves to put it in, maybe take some digital images of those collections. Yeah, so there's ways to think about it.
And Robin, I'll definitely take from your earlier comment, sticky tape is a big no-no.
You
were pretty unequivocal about that.
Clear contact.
We spend our lives, our poor paper conservators spend their lives removing them, because the sticky tape is actually quite corrosive. The other one is lamination. Don't do it.
Nick just winced.
And also, I jump in and say rubber bands, also another one to degrade over time.
What about rolling it up and putting it in one of those tubes? Is rolling bad too?
Not necessarily. Folding over time, folding and unfolding weakens the fold in the paper. So keeping things flat is fantastic and ideal in that sense. Reducing that handling and folding, framing, often things like paper clips, particularly if they're older ones and they're corroding and rusting. So we often use a little, they look like plastic, but it's actually polystyrene. Just different things to kind of put them into an archival context. And there's a lot of suppliers out there who can support that sort of rehousing work as well.
And Robin, you are doing a call out for volunteers to help with the transcription. What are you looking for in a volunteer?
Oh, we're looking for anyone that's interested. So
anyone and everyone, with
a bit of patience. So obviously, I think I touched on it earlier, handwriting is complex and it's changed over time and it is hard to read. And so our aim is to make the collections as user-friendly and accessible as possible. And so we do work towards transcribing the collections because you can just read them so much more easily. And I've done a lot of proofreading of people's transcriptions. I've had various forms of transcription projects over many years, and it's such a easy process to read a transcribed collection, and then you can search over the text in a digital format. So
I'm just remembering my beautiful Nana and Pa's handwriting and how tricky it was to read their handwriting, and it can be hard. So how can people get in touch? What's the best way of them going about that? Can they jump onto the Australian War Memorials website? Is that the best way of doing that, Robin?
Yes, it's launched. You could go to the War Memorials website and click on our transcribe there, or you can go straight to the transcription tool, which is transcribe.awm, standing for Australian War Memorial.gov.au. So you can go straight to cut to the chase, or have and a look on our site and click through.
I want to share some of these text messages. It says, I've just been gifted the love letters of my great-grandfather, who was a prisoner of war in World War II. He was 44 with five children and was tragically killed. He died on the Sandakan Death March. He was a beautiful writer and poet. I'm about to embark on transcribing all of these letters, which are fragile and on rice paper. I want to honour his legacy, but I'm nervous about the emotional impact it will have on me. That's from Danielle in Bundoora. I can't imagine how emotional that would be. Do you have any advice, Robin, for Danielle? I mean,
yes.
Take a break
when you're doing it. And we do advise people who are transcribing for us to make sure that you're not sitting there for too long, because there's also a physical health factor in typing too long, but the emotional state is also give yourself a break from for that kind of collection, and the memorial has lots of these as well. Yes, very important not to spend too long in that land. And
that's right, look after yourself. Mark's been waiting patiently in Rye. Morning, Mark.
Yeah, hi. My grandfather was in the Australian Army, went in the desert and in World War One, and he wasn't a pilot. He took a whole lot of photographs of planes that crashed. He left notes on the back, pictures of convoys. Oh. Even has one of von Richthofen with two Australian pilots. Wow. We've got all these photos. They're in excellent condition. If I digitise them, does the War Memorial want them? Would like they like the originals?
Robin?
Yes.
I didn't think it was going to be a no, we're good. Yeah, I thought it was
still
going to be an easy
The memorial's still actively collecting for all wars because it's ongoing. Although we've got a big collection, when you're doing a deep dive for your historic research, you can still see gaps and areas. So we're still absolutely actively collecting, and especially for letters and diaries, because they're an individual experience. So they offer a different perspective. There's everybody's experiences come together, and you can then write in a different way to just if you've got one or two. So they're very important for historic research to get a variety of perspectives. And the only thing I'll qualify it is, because we are archiving for posterity, we really only take original material.
Okay, well, we've popped Mark on hold, and that way you guys can work out the finer details there, because we just quickly want to also have a chat to Dean, who's in Central Victoria. Hi, Dean.
Good morning. My father just recently turned 90, and he found some diaries that my mum had written between 1947 and 1959 that were not much bigger than the size of your hand in cursive handwriting. And at the age of 89, he sat down and he transcribed them all into a book for my brother and I.
Oh, my goodness.
And it's quite remarkable. This is before my mum and dad were going out, but the talks about all the, I thought I was hyperactive, she was just next level. She went to dances almost every night. She travelled around. She went, it was just insane. And she liked my dad, but my dad couldn't dance, so she hired a hall to teach him to dance.
The dancers, I love that, because the dancers were a big deal, right? They
absolutely
were everywhere, in every country town, in every suburb. They were the social outings, whether or not who you went to the dance with, whether or not you're allowed to go to the dance. How beautiful that he did that for you, Dean.
It's just wonderful. And I've actually, it's funny that Lottie was saying about take your time typing it up. I'm actually taking my time reading it, and I haven't got through it all yet, but just trying to, he's even notated who all the people are, so we get to know who someone's mentioned, and then he'll say who they were and how they fit into the story if we didn't know who they were. So he spent an awful lot of time doing it. So it's fabulous to have, because Mum died over 30 years ago and Dad never even knew she kept diaries.
Dean, what
an incredible personal history to have access to. There's not many people who would get that opportunity. That is truly remarkable.
Thoughtful. How absolutely thoughtful. Dean, thank you so much for sharing this. Some of the stories that have come through that we haven't been able to get to, and some of the texts as well. If this is something that you're interested in, Robin van Dyk, the head of research centre at the Australian War Memorial, wants you and wants your help if you want to transcribe some of the thousands of letters that they've got, or if you think that maybe you have got some letters that they want, you can go to the Australian War Memorial website. Robin, thank you so much for your time and your insights and the work that you do. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Nick Henderson, the Volunteer Collection Manager at the Australian Queer Archives. I guess the same would go for you. If there are people listening that maybe think, oh, hang on a second, I think I've got a photograph or I've got a letter that might be more important than I realise.
Absolutely. Please get in touch. We're just at queerarchives.org.au. And, you know, there may well be that other bundle of letter that the unmarried uncle or aunt might have at the back of their cupboard. So we'd certainly be very, very interested in that material as well.
Thank you so much. There's so many messages here. There's just one that says, Nick Healy, we found an old letter from the 1930s in the ceiling of a house in Warrigal. The husband had walked to Geelong to get work on the railways. He was sending a few pounds back to his wife and his kids. It was so full of love and longing for his family. And that idea when you renovate a house or you move into a house or you dig something up and you find that we found a copy of The Age from 1921 in our backyard. Yeah, and it's sort of crumbling and falling apart, and I was like, don't touch it, I don't know what to do with it, but no one touch it. It's incredible.
The text would be getting incredible. And just quickly from Joan, I'm looking at a letter right now. It is dated April 5, 1917. It's from a young French girl to my grandfather. I've been trying to find her family via the French embassy, but no luck. The writing is just beautiful. And I love that these stories can echo throughout the centuries that way.
They just tell us so much, and the secrets and the love and this, the snapshot of that moment in time. If you have letters, contact the Australian War Memorial if you want to volunteer to transcribe them. And you can also contact the Australian Queer Archives as well. Nick Healy, thank you so much.
Anytime.
Take care. Speak tomorrow.